Talk Real Estate with Sharon McNamara, sponsored by Boston Connect Real Estate Services.
Hi, I'm your host, Sharon McNamara, and you are listening to Talk Real Estate Roundtable. Let me share a little bit about my background before we get started. I am the broker owner of Boston Connect Real Estate, a boutique firm that is home to over 30 real estate sales and marketing agents who service home buyers and home sellers throughout Boston, the South Shore, the South Coast, and Cape Cod. Our firm takes pride in assisting our clients in the next chapter of their lives by taking a holistic approach to their real estate endeavors. We believe that every move should be a moving experience. Every week, my co-host Melissa Wallace and I will provide you with my team's unique marketing approach to selling homes and share with you our expertise in navigating the home buying process. We value the experience of our agents at Boston Connect Real Estate so much that not only will you hear my perspective on real estate topics, occasionally you will hear the expert thoughts and opinions of our experienced agents at Boston Connect Real Estate. Be a part of our roundtable. If you have any questions during the show, please call 781-837-4900. We love to talk real estate. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you'd like to listen to podcasts at Talk Real Estate Roundtable. If you would like a one-on-one consultation with me and my team to discuss your real estate needs, you can connect with me at bostonconnect.com or 781-826-8000. Now, sit back, relax, take good notes, and let's talk real estate.
And hello to all my South Shore neighbors. You are listening to Talk Real Estate Roundtable. My name is Melissa Wallace, and I am joined live and in studio by Sam Horton, who is a full-time realtor here at Boston Connect Real Estate. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me on again.
Literally just walked through the door, but you have a good reason, so I can't give you any, you know, I was going to say a swear, but I won't say a swear, but because you were showing a house. So, of course, we can give you a little leniency there, you know, selling some real estate, which is what we love to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Selling, not showing. Right? Yeah. That's what we say.
Selling. Yeah. He was selling real estate today. But yes, you have joined us on the show. You've actually hosted the show without me as well in the past with your lovely wife, Mary Horton. Mary actually called me right before the show, and she was finishing up an appointment. And she was going to try to join us, but she's all the way in West Bridgewater in her new construction development, so she couldn't make it. But we have you. We have one half of the Hortons.
That is correct. Yeah. And I would say she did a better job of hosting it last time. I just was here for color commentary.
Yeah. Well, it's all about you tonight, Sam. So you have been on the show, but why don't you reintroduce yourself to all of our listeners in case they didn't catch that one?
Sure. So again, my name's Sam Horton. I am a real estate agent at Boston Connect. I specialize with first-time home buyers, primarily sellers and investors. And that's kind of my niche, is the investing side of things. I've been doing it for about 10 years and hopefully going to continue doing it. Foreseeable future.
Yes, let us hope. But yes, like you said, you were selling real estate tonight, and not only do you work with investors, you are an investor yourself. You do an investor meetup as well. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the third Thursday of every month, we meet actually at our office in Pembroke at Boston Connect. Sometimes we do switch up the venue, but primarily it's at the office. We always try and get a speaker of value, so someone that can bring knowledge to investors of all schools, if you will. So whether you're just getting started or you're a seasoned veteran, we try and bring in speakers that can help inform, educate, and inspire.
Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily have to be an investor. It's something that you might want for your future as well, because I, you know, not just because I work here at Boston Connect with you, I attended one of yours as well, not just to sort of get the feel of what you're doing here sort of after hours, but also at the time I was in the process of trying to find a house at that point. But I was sort of stuck in the mindset of like, do I want a single family home for myself, or do I want a multifamily where it's something that I can sort of invest in my future as well?
And what do you think I wanted you to buy?
I know exactly what you wanted me to buy. but you know what? I didn't even think that that would be a reality for me until everybody knows that I worked with Jasmine. And Jasmine's been on our show several times, even a couple weeks ago. And she was the one who initially was like, have you thought of a multifamily? And I was like, listen, I've heard it a lot from Sam, but now that I'm like actually having the conversation about purchase something, of course you're going to bring it up. But I didn't think that it would be a possibility until I had that conversation.
Well, so like a lot of first time investors will get into that as like either a house hack. So similar to you, I mean, you bought a single family house, but you could still rent out a room to a friend, someone you trust, and help supplement that, you know, subsidize that mortgage payment that you have. Same scenario with multifamily purchases, but you can actually use the forecasted income from the rental units to help with your income on the purchasing side. So that's kind of where Jasmine was coming in, I'm sure. And that is what I try and tell a lot of first-time home buyers, especially if you're buying in the Massachusetts market, South Shore area, because things have gotten quite expensive.
Yes. So. They certainly have. You're listening to Talk Real Estate Roundtable. Again, my name is Melissa Wallace. I'm joined by Sam Horton, who is a full-time realtor here at Boston Connect Real Estate. If you have any questions for Sam or any questions in general about real estate or investing properties, you can call Larry. We have Larry tonight at WATD 781-837-4900. You can also text that number if you're feeling a little shy and don't want to talk to us. But we are live on Facebook, so Sam, give us a wave. We're live on Facebook, so be sure to follow us there. You can leave a comment as well. I'll be monitoring it. Looks like your mom's watching.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Rumi. My old Rumi. I texted her a video of Zoe today because Zoe was an absolute menace last night. And I was like, Holly would totally appreciate this video. okay, I sort of want to start from the very beginning. So, and this will be interesting because you can also give your personal take on this as well, because you are an investor, you have investment properties. But reasons why you would want to buy a rental or an investment property. I don't know if you do want to get personal on that level or if you want to just keep it sort of surface with what your clients are, sort of how you do your business. But why are the initial reasons why somebody wants to get an investment property?
Well, I mean, I guess first and foremost, I think no matter who you are, you should be investing, whether it's in real estate, the stock market. Find your niche, find what you want, because that's really the only way you can get financial freedom at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I don't think too many people working for someone else are going to reach that financial freedom unless you take that risk, right? So pick a niche and stick to it. My niche just happens to be real estate. I like it because it's physical. I can touch it. I can control it. It's my job.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why I stuck with real estate. I have very minimal in the stock market, and most of my money is tied up within real estate itself. And then I guess to answer your question, as far as the benefits go, there's a lot of benefits. There's also can be a lot of headaches, for sure. But cash flow being primarily the number one for most people is like, will it generate additional monthly income for me, right? Debt pay down or loan pay down would be another one, because you're having someone else pay down debt for you,
right?
Assuming they're paying and you're doing a good job of putting the right tenants in place, they're paying down the debt for you, and then you're gonna see the equity from that debt pay down. And then, you know, another option is also appreciation. We've seen that lately with crazy amounts of appreciation over the last few years. So if you buy something, they're paying down the debt, you're getting that equity just from the debt pay down, and now you have additional market appreciation on top of that, so that you can potentially reuse this same property down the road. You could pull out a HELOC or refinance, take that money and then buy another property, and then you stack the properties as a result. And then obviously one of the last benefits, in my opinion, would be the taxes involved with it. There's a lot of creative ways. I'm not an accountant. I don't pretend to be one. Talk to your accountant if you do have multifamilies and you're trying to figure out the best way to, you know, not pay Uncle Sam as much. But there's a lot of tax benefits to owning in real estate as well.
Yeah. I think just as an outsider observing you, Sam, I think that you might have, you know, sort of gone with the real estate route instead of like maybe the stock market and stuff like that, is because everybody needs a place to live. So whether you're renting or you're purchasing a single family home or a multifamily home or you're an investor, you need somewhere to live. And, you know, with investors, you're most likely going to be, housing people in those. And like you said, you have to, you know, if you put the right tenants in place and they are going to be paying you rent, you know, it would probably be the smart thing to do is to make some money off of that.
Yeah, so. I would agree. And just like in anything else, you have bad landlords and you have bad tenants, right? Yeah. And sometimes you have both in the same scenario, and that's a recipe for disaster. But, you know, educate yourself first on how to be a good landlord. Mm-hmm. Understand, you know, Massachusetts state laws, fair housing, all mm-hmm. that stuff, so that you are handling every scenario with professionalism and courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the tenant side, it's one, you know, I don't want to say interviewing, but just, you know, making sure that the tenant is capable and able to afford the rent and you know, doing the background checks, doing all of the screening that you can mm-hmm. to make sure, you know, your asset, the one you purchased, is protected as well.
Yeah. So when you meet with an investor or somebody who is potentially wanting to be an investor, do you ask the question, I would hope that you would ask the question, is what kind of property are you looking for? And sort of how do they come up with, I want a single family that I'm going to be renting out. I want a multifamily. I want, what do you call it, doors? So like, I want 100 doors.
Yeah. The most common, I guess, term would be doors. So it's, you know, if you have a two family, you have two doors. If you have a three family, you have three doors. And then if you talk to someone that has 18 doors, they probably have that across a few properties or they have one very large asset. But yeah, that is a qualifying question. And it's definitely helps separate a true real estate investor from a non-real estate investor. Because if they go, I'm looking for anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a broad spectrum. Are you looking for industrial, commercial,
a
single family flip? Are you looking to rent a single family, Airbnb?
Yeah, there's so many different avenues. Like a single family I have on my list here, single family, multifamily, apartment building with 5+ units, mixed use. So I would assume like, you know, apartments or units, and then maybe a shop or Sharon and Mary or Sharon and Mark have a mixed use. So they have, you know, two doors. I'm trying to get the lingo.
They have three doors technically because they have the garage.
Well, I'm going to say mixed use for the garage. So is it two doors or three doors?
You could argue three doors.
Okay. So they got three doors, which is a mixed use, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, in each asset class, you can even go further, not to bore people, but you can go further into, like, again, short-term, long-term, midterm.
Right.
Midterm is something that not a lot of people know about. And it's, you know, it depends on your niche again. But let's just say you have a property near Weymouth and you know that there's South Shore Hospital right there.
Right.
You can rent to contract nurses on a midterm furnished rental.
Yeah.
And you might be able to outperform the single family rental or the multifamily rental in that area with that type of strategy.
I actually just recently met somebody, one of Kristen Howlett, who is a full-time realtor here at Boston Connect Real Estate as well. On our show all the time, she has a seller who is a traveling nurse. And I had asked him, you know, is it hard for you to get a rental? Because, you know, you're really only there for a couple months and then you move on to the next one and you move on to the next one. And he said that, you know, his job really does help him try to get rentals, but they're around the hospitals that he works at. They do have those midterm, short-term rentals where they're looking for people like that. So like the turnover, they know that they are going to take care of, you know, the unit or whatever. And he's like, you know, I'm able to stay for a couple months. And I say, I'll shovel for you. I'll do this, like, sort of thing to make it seem more a little bit appealing to maybe the landlord.
Yeah. You do got to be careful with the shoveling thing.
Yeah.
Because that could be a liability waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Talk to your attorney, but an insurance provider. But the midterm game is interesting. It's another niche, obviously, and it really is specific to where you're looking to purchase your asset and making sure that you have the amenities needed for that type of renter. And midterm typically ranges anywhere between a month to like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not your short term is typically your week or two, right? Your vacation property, the one on the lake or the one on the Cape or wherever you're looking. But the midterm does have a longer stay.
So how does somebody come to decide, like, if they want short, like, if they want to own a property and have it be a short-term rental, like an Airbnb or something like that, or the, if they want it to be longer-term?
So I always encourage people to do as much research as they can on each topic and see what kind of fits their personality the best. Short-term rentals, in my opinion, are much more hands-on. Because one, you have to make sure people, when you're staying in an Airbnb or a VRBO, you're expecting basically a hotel stay.
Right.
It's a concierge service. You're not a tenant. You are paying premium money to stay there for the week. So you expect, you know, the AC to work.
The best of the best. Yeah. You expect everything to be in working order.
Exactly. So setting that up, like understanding that when you go into an Airbnb, and that's why a lot of Airbnbs are failing right now, is because you have these hosts that think, oh, I'm just going to buy this house, so I'm going to throw it on Airbnb and I'm going to make money.
Right.
Not the case. You need to be responsive. You need to address issues promptly. I have the privilege of managing some on the Cape, and so I've dealt with that for a little while and can understand the pressure and the response time. Whereas, like, you know, the midterm is a little bit more relaxed in a sense, because they're staying there for the longer term. You don't, you know, you can get back to people within 24 hours, typically, unless it's an emergency. Mm-hmm. Obviously, get back to people a lot sooner in that scenario. And the long term is kind of in the same umbrella as the midterm, except you don't even have to worry about furnishing the long-term rental.
Long-term rental. Well, but you could get a furnished one.
You could. But either way, it's always recommended just to do your research. And that can be going to networking groups like the one I host or any of the other local ones nearby. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch. And you can go on meetup.com. You can go to biggerpockets.com. And they'll have meetups organized on there. And just talking to people. Talk to people that actually do it.
Yeah.
Every day, and see, okay, this kind of fits what I'm thinking, or this doesn't fit what I'm thinking.
And I would think that might be a little intimidating to be able to find the people who you could ask those questions to. But if somebody came to one of your meetups, they would certainly be able to meet somebody who has been in their shoes or could sort of guide them on the right path.
Yeah, and from there, I usually just recommend try and find the chattiest Kathy in the room, because usually they know most of the people in the room, so aka myself. So
yeah, I was going to say, is that you?
Yeah, if you come up to me and you say, hey, you know, is anyone here do Airbnb? I'll be like, yeah, come talk to Brian, come talk to Jack, come talk to, you know, whoever it is. This person does it all the time, and they love it, and this is why they love it, and they'll fill you in on that information if you're curious about it.
Yeah. Well, also, and we touched upon this, so I did a show in January about Airbnbs because obviously the Flynns and Jess Page, they have investment properties out of state. And I had asked them, I was like, you know, when something happens, when a guest is there, you know, how do you handle that being so far away from it? So I think that would be another factor into deciding about, you know, the location of your investment properties. Like, do you want to be the one to go there? You know, how far of a distance do you want to go? Or are you going to have to hire somebody that is local that can sort of maintain those properties?
Right. And that, again, that goes into the strategy, the planning of it, right? So I have a friend, Dave Menapace, probably killing his name. Hopefully he's not listening. But he runs the 5-star Airbnb co-host. So what he does is he sets up all these systems for people. So if you have the capital to do it and you like the idea of running an Airbnb, you know, he sets up the strategy, the marketing, everything for you in those areas, and even finds the, you know, the cleaner and the handyman or whatever you need for that area, so that you don't have to physically drive there.
Right.
That comes at a cost, the management fee.
Yeah.
So you have to run that into your numbers and make sure it makes sense.
Okay. Well, we've been assuming that you have an investment property. So why don't we sort of backtrack a little bit, and how can somebody find an investment property? Who helps them? Where's the avenue that they start?
So the investing world is a little bit different than the retail world, which would be your normal traditional buyer seller, in my opinion. I still think real estate agents are one of the best avenues, because they tend to get information on properties before other people, especially if you're looking for Airbnb or a single family, that type of thing. If you're looking for, you know, larger multifamily assets, property managers can be a great source. And again, going to meetups and meeting these people that that have those associations. Honestly, there are other ways to kind of get in front of people that are willing to sell, but it takes a lot of money, time, mm-hmm. and energy. Mm-hmm. So it could be, if you don't want to do that, it could be partnering with or finding wholesalers, which is someone that kind of markets to sellers off market, and they try and get a contract off market. So you don't see it necessarily on MLS, you don't see it on Zillow. They just try and partner with people and work with the seller and try and create a mutual relationship there to get mm-hmm. these properties. Mm-hmm. So, you know, realtors, it's a lot of work. I mean, it is. And, you know, if everyone could do it, everyone mm-hmm. would have it, right?
Right.
So it's having these conversations. It's not giving up and going to the meetups, connecting with the right people and building a team around you, whether it's an agent, a wholesaler, and then, you know, a property manager. You talk to all three and you say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. I'd love to partner with you guys on this in some capacity. However that looks, you can structure that on your own.
Yeah.
But those people will then hopefully find you a deal. And it may not be right away.
Yeah.
It may be a few months. It may be a year, but it can happen.
So. Yeah. And I sort of second the use a realtor, someone to represent your best interests. But also something that I've sort of realized in the past, I don't know, 10 years, I've been here 8, so 10, 11 years, is that there are a lot of real estate agents who are investors themselves because they're in the business, like really in the business, engulfed in it. It's around them. Why not invest in the business that you're working in?
100%.
And I feel like you probably had the same sort of idea.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, when I got into real estate,
maybe not so much in the beginning because you were definitely doing some resales.
I always like to say I shot myself in the foot because I had opportunities in front of me when I started real estate that I didn't realize mm-hmm. were opportunities at the time because mm-hmm. my mind was not
thinking. For investing?
Yes.
Okay.
My mind was not thinking investing. It was thinking sale.
Gotta sell.
Yeah. I had a great opportunity with my mom's listening. Her best friend had a two-family mm-hmm. in Randolph. She owned it outright, so no loan on it, and wanted me to buy it. And in my mind at the time, it was like my first year in real estate. I had very little money. I was like, I can't buy this thing. I don't know how to buy it, and it needed work.
Yeah.
And you know, now looking back at that, I'm like, she owned it outright. I could have approached her for a seller finance deal.
Yeah.
She didn't necessarily at the time need the money.
Right.
So she would have probably been on board for a seller fi.
Yeah.
I could have then maybe reached out to, you know, other people that I know that maybe have the money, partner with them to work on the rehab and then refinance and pay everyone back.
Yeah.
And then I would have had a two family, you know, back in 2015.
For the past 10 years.
Correct. And then I would have reaped some of the reasons why to buy a rental property mm-hmm. that we discussed earlier, like appreciation and cash flow.
Yeah. So. Well, that sort of goes into my next question is how do you pay for all of this?
There's a multitude of ways, right? So, some of the most successful real estate investors still keep their W-2 jobs. Like they'll work, you know, outside of the industry and again, find right partners and use their stable income to purchase these properties on commercial loans or, you know, investor friendly loans, non-QM loans. Those are a few of the popular ones. There's also, hard money, or private money. Hard money would be a lender that usually charges a much higher interest rate, you know, in excess of 12 to 14% sometimes. They usually hit you with a couple points, but the benefit is that it's treated as cash. There's no, you know, there's no formal appraisal. You can close in 2 weeks, depending on the title search, and get into the property, and then they'll also fund the rehab. So they'll give you money to fund the rehab. Most of those hard money lenders will, you know, take a look at the property. They'll make sure that there is equity in it so that if they do have to foreclose on you, that they can actually
make money.
They
feel like they'll get their money back.
Correct, correct. And then they typically like to partner with experience. You know, the higher the interest rate, the more points, the less experience you have. The lower the interest rate and the lower the points, the more experience you have typically in those deals.
Mm-hmm.
And then the private money side is if you get that rich uncle that's just sitting on a lot of money and he doesn't know what to do with it, you know, you can always ask them and be like, hey, I have this deal. I have a house. I think it's a deal. Here's what I think it's going to be worth when it's all done. Like, would you be willing to partner with me on this and I'll pay you a return or I will split the profits made on it. However you want to set it up, that's the beauty of real estate because it's always negotiable.
Yeah.
In every aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of different avenues. There recently, I saw an offer come through with the non-QM loan. And I remember we did a little class with Pete Fakizen, who was at Cross Country Mortgage. He came in and
taught. I believe he's the number one non-QM lender in Mass.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So every time I see non-QM, I'm like, call Pete. Because yeah. I was like, I still don't understand them. But, you know, obviously Pete does. So he's great at explaining them. But yeah, I saw something come through. But it made me think, like, you know, somebody who maybe is using like hard money, you know, as cash to purchase a property, you know, I would just me in my head, I'd be like, oh my gosh, the interest rate is so high. The points, you know, how am I going to afford to pay this back? That would be the number one thing in my head. Yep, yep. Like, how am I going to pay this back?
So the common trend with hard money is what we call the Burr method. So it's buy, rehab, rent, repeat.
gosh.
So it's buy it with cash or hard money. And then it is, hopefully with hard money, you want to do it in a quick time frame because usually they only give you a 6 to 12 month term.
So would that be in a market where, you know, the seller wants a quick close, is looking for something with cash, this would be sort of the appealing offer for them?
Correct. If for whatever reason that seller has to get rid of the property in 2 weeks or less or a month, they need it done by the end of the month. Hard money is hard money or cash is the route to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that would allow you to secure that asset quickly.
Yeah.
But the hard money loan, as you said, high interest rate, it's a high monthly expense. So the idea is you really need to have your ducks in a row. You need to have your GC lined up if you're not a GC, and you need to get in there and flip the property or do the
construction work.
You got
to be ready to start
right away.
Day of.
Yep. Permits, everything, get it going. So that way,
anxiety just thinking about it. I just bought one house. I'm not to rent it to anybody, but that makes me so that gives me heart palpitations. Well,
it definitely it's not for, you know,
it's not for the weak.
Correct. It's definitely, you know, it takes some courage.
Yeah,
it does, and some knowledge. You know,
yeah,
it takes both.
Yeah, because the outcome and the benefits are, you know, I would hope outweigh sort of the nervousness that I'm feeling, you know?
Correct. But, you know, that's why they call it investing, right? Because you can still get, you know, screwed at the end of the day if you mess up. You know, if it takes you 16 months to flip it and now you're paying $4,000 a month in hard money costs and you eat all your profit away.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because even when I was looking, you know, things would come on the market in my price range and you'd look at it and it doesn't have siding or it doesn't have walls in the inside. It doesn't like it's a project that somebody walked away from. And it's like, oh, buyer to, you know, finish, you know, it, you know, buyer to put it in a toilet, you know, because there's absolutely nothing. And I was like, oh, my gosh. But they kept popping up.
Yep.
All the past couple years.
There's one in Hanson that I was actually looking at off market, and this individual unfortunately took a loan out with a hard money person that I know, and they thought they could build a 5-bedroom house, but the lot was deeded 2-bedroom for the town.
Wow.
So you could never put bigger than 2 bedrooms on that lot. You could never put a larger than a 2-bedroom septic system on that lot. So he ended up going to foreclosure with the hard money lender, and that was obviously a painful experience for that individual.
Yeah.
And that just comes back to, you know, partnering with the right people, doing your research.
Yeah.
You know, I
know. I'm just thinking, how did that happen?
I don't believe this individual used a realtor and didn't use anyone to help him with the process.
He didn't know the questions to ask.
Correct. And he just thought that they could he started framing out a very nice house, but it was too big of a house for the space, and you know, it got shut down. And then unfortunately couldn't sell to anyone else and it got foreclosed. So there are mistakes made for sure. And that's where it comes down to, again, partnering with the right people, talking to the right people, and making sure you know what you're getting yourself into.
Partnering with Sam Horton, who is a full-time realtor here at Boston Connect Real Estate. And we'll give your contact information at the end. And of course, when Julia posts our show tomorrow and makes it into a podcast, we will be sure to include your contact information as well. Again, if anybody has any questions for us, you can call or text 781-837-4900. We do have quite a few people watching us on Facebook. So, and hi, Faith. Faith is watching us as well, and Karen. I love having you on because you're just so knowledgeable and you could just like talk about it. And again, like you said, if when you come to the meetups and you see somebody who's like chatty Cathy and talking to everybody, that's you. It's because you're passionate about it and you live it every day.
Yeah. Yep. So I it sounds corny, but I do like educating people. So, and I like being educated. So like if someone comes in and they don't know what they're doing, you know, I try and steer them in the right direction as best I can. And then, you know, sometimes someone comes in and they school me on zoning, like Steve Bjorklund, if he's out there listening, because he is a zoning guru.
He schools you on zoning?
He schools everyone on zoning.
Yeah. In what way? What does he say?
He's just a very knowledgeable individual.
Yeah.
When it comes to zoning. He knows all the bylaws in like the South Shore.
Yeah. Okay, so we went through sort of how you're going to pay with this. What about, I would assume, well, I have HELOC on my
Yeah, so I mean, going back to like other ways to secure it. If you potentially already have your single family house and you're interested in getting into it, there's other options like a cash out refi. Right now, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that because the interest rates are higher, so you're going to have a higher mortgage payment as a result of that. But the other option would be a HELOC or a home equity line of credit, which basically acts as a credit card that would allow you, and I would only use this if you're using it as an investment. Don't go, in my opinion, I don't think it's worth a HELOC to go do a new kitchen, because then you're still going to be paying for that kitchen plus interest.
Yeah.
It's finding that property, following the Burr method that we spoke about earlier, buying it, renting it, or rehabbing it, renting it, refinancing it, and repeating it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding something that needs work, adding value to it, value add, right?
Yeah.
That's what we call it. And then refinancing and capturing that money back, and then hopefully being able to pay off that HELOC that you took out, or most of it. Because if you carry a small HELOC, it's probably not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. But you could also get a traditional loan for an investment property as well, right?
Yep, 100%. You could do investor loans. They, depending on who you go through, the non-QM is an investor loan technically.
Mm-hmm.
But any, you know, talk to your lender on that one specifically, because they change.
Mm-hmm. So sort of walk me through how you work with your investors. So take yourself as an investor out of it. How do you go through the process with your investors? They come to you and say, Sam, I want an investment property. Either I already have one or I don't have one. Sort of walk me through their process and how you show them properties, how, you know, you sort of guide them through the process of buying it.
So it's a little bit more complicated, I guess, working with investors than your traditional buyer, because if you're working with a traditional buyer or seller, you're basically saying, okay, you know, here's what we have on MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we can look at.
Here's all the 3-bedroom colonials you're looking for, right. 4-bedroom colonials right. You're looking for.
Yeah. And there's all of what, 5 in Pembroke right now. So, that is more, I want to say streamlined. When it comes to working with investors, it's, you're really more of a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm
out there because I'm going to these networking events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting like-minded individuals. I'm always asking, hey, do you have anything to sell?
Yeah.
Right. And having that conversation, and you'd be surprised how many investors are like, yeah, I actually want to sell this and trade up and get.
Yeah.
So I have a 4-unit. I want to get an 8-unit
or
whatever. And then right there, that moment, you now have an off-market 4-family. And now I'll go to my, you know, my select investors. I like to call them my select investors because there's a lot of people that want to get into investing, but never will. So the ones that I know have the money or have the means to do it or the experience, I'll say, hey, I have, you know, I got word of this 4-family. It's located in Plimpton or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And would you be interested? I can set up an appointment. And that's kind of how it works on the investor side of things.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's a lot off market?
Yes. 100%. Now more than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, it was prior to 2019, you could still find some deals on market, and I promise you there's still some people out there now that are finding some deals on market.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was willing to bet, a majority of the actual deals are off market.
I every time something came on that was a multifamily, I sent it to you and I said, what do you think? What do you think? I feel like a lot of it has to do with, and I think after the show that you did with Mary, maybe last year, somebody had called after and was saying like, oh, I have a friend who might know somebody who has something that might come on. And I'm like, okay, call Sam. Like, she like really wanted to get in touch with me. And I'm like, yeah, you're speaking another language. Call Sam Horan. I don't know what you're talking about. But I feel like a lot of it is done off market. So Is that that's more beneficial to what, the buyer, the seller?
It's tough. So I would say it's more beneficial to the buyer because, generally speaking, if it's off market, that means there's less competition.
Yeah.
Less competition means, you know, it's a good deal. And most investors that are selling off market are typically doing it because they don't want to, honestly, they just don't want to deal with for lack of a better word, a circus. They don't want 50 people, especially if it's a rental property and they have tenants involved.
Yeah.
They don't want to spook their tenants because their tenants are paying. They want, you know, one or two or three bona fide buyers to walk through that property.
Yeah.
And I love agents, but we will all pretend we have a bona fide buyer just to get into that property.
Yeah.
So that's why they don't put it on market, because they just go, okay, I want a handful of people that I trust and know can complete this deal quietly and efficiently, so that I can go find the next one. Or if they're exiting completely, sell it.
You bring up a good point, because now I'm thinking, okay, somebody who wants to sell their investment property to somebody else who wants to purchase an investment property, you know, there is an option of having the tenants still stay in place,
correct,
right? But
correct.
So as somebody purchasing their first, you know, investment property, you have to think, you know, do I want to purchase something that already has tenants in place that maybe have a long rental history and, you know, they're great tenants, or do I want it vacant? Am I going to occupy one of the units?
Yep.
These are all questions that you have to ask yourself.
Oh yeah. And it depends on your situation too, because if you're a first time home buyer, if you're using an FHA product or something like that, you're going to have to occupy one of the units. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, if you have, you know, if you're in a multiple offer scenario, which most multifamilies are now, most single families are in too, but like every multifamily usually has multiple offers on it nowadays. It's the more you put on that offer, the less appealing it is to that seller. Hey seller, you know, we love the property. You know, I can see the potential for cash flow and improvements here. I notice you have three tenants. I'd like them all out by the time we close. And maybe they all have leases. Right?
Yeah.
And what's the seller going
to do? How do you get out of those?
Right. So the seller's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to move on in a way that is the least amount of work for me possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you see these off-market situations.
So that's what a seller typically wants. If they're trying to sell their investment property, they most likely want the cleanest offer that's coming through.
Correct.
Especially if they're going to be doing it off-market.
Yep. Yeah. And just because there will be multiple offers. So the cleanest offer usually wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he or she who pays the most and writes the cleanest offer. Basically.
Yeah. I feel like there's just so much to, like, so much with investment. I did have another question about seller financing.
Yes.
Can you explain that when it comes to purchasing a multifamily or an investment property with seller financing?
So that would be like a good candidate might be someone that is older, that has held on to multifamilies for a long time. They've paid off all or most of the debt on the properties, and now they're looking to get out of the property. It can benefit both parties, where the seller can really determine the terms. Well, both parties essentially can determine the terms of the loan itself. It's a cool, not a lot of people do it, but it is a cool way to finance, because, and sorry to all my lender friends, because that obviously cuts out the lender.
Yeah.
Because in this situation, the seller becomes the lender, but the seller doesn't take a big tax hit because they're not receiving all the funds from their sales day one. Right.
Right.
So they're literally issuing a loan to the buyer.
Yeah.
That buyer is now paying that debt. Right. And so now they're receiving a monthly paycheck from that buyer for the mortgage payment.
What would be the benefit for a seller to do that, or to offer that?
If they don't want to take on that big capital gains, because if they've owned it for 30 years and they didn't live in it, they're going to pay, you know, whatever, 25%, or again, talk to your accountant, not an accountant, but, you know.
That just made my heart drop when you said 20%, well, 25%.
If you live in it through the last 5 years, you're okay. But if you're talking to someone that has a couple multifamilies and they're just trying to liquidate them, they're going to have a tax event when they sell that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you choose to do seller financing, you're not going to have that taxable event.
As somebody who's purchasing an investment property, maybe it's a multifamily, do you have to live in it?
No.
So you can
depends on the loan you're using.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But there is a loan or maybe an avenue of purchasing an investment where you would have to live in?
Correct. Yeah. In so like an FHA product, or even like the some of the conventional products as well will require you to live in it. Because if you use an FHA loan and you don't live in it, that is committing mortgage fraud.
Ah.
So we don't want to do
that. The more you know.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't want to commit mortgage fraud. Correct. Here.
Or a VA loan, same thing.
Yeah.
They would want you to live in the
U.S. Want you to live in it. Yeah, I would think, right?
Right.
That would make sense.
Yep.
but if you already, so maybe it's not your first property that you're purchasing, but maybe you have a single family home and you want to purchase an investment property, you most likely don't have to live in your investment property, right? If you still have your single family.
At that point, you'd be applying for an investor loan.
Okay.
Or like a non-QM loan, mm-hmm. or again, talking about some of the other strategies we talked about.
So it wouldn't necessarily be a traditional
Correct.
Loan like that. It Correct. Would be like an investor loan.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, just future
That's how
forecasting.
You avoid the mortgage fraud.
Though. Yeah. Please do not commit mortgage fraud. Please, this is like a disclaimer. Do not do that. Bye. But yeah, we only have about six minutes or so. I know that we could sort of talk about this forever. You can talk about it all night because sometimes you're here very, very late at night with your investor meetups.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure talking about all this stuff. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon that you definitely want to get across to our listeners?
I guess I'm a big proponent of TTP, which is talk to people. Go to meetups, talk to like-minded individuals. If you're interested in it, you can always give me a call or shoot me an email or a text. I'm always happy to talk about it, obviously. But talking to people is the number one thing. It's because you never know.
Yeah.
I always find the most knowledge from talking to people that have already done it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that more than any book or podcast that I listen to. But talking to people that are in the trenches doing it every day, that is where most of the knowledge comes from.
Yeah. And I say this about everything. You don't know unless you ask.
Right.
So, 100%. You know, and I really do commend you for the meetups that you do. And, you know, it's you don't necessarily have to be an investor. You could be somebody who, you know, works for a company or owns a company that maybe investors would need to use, something like that. So, you know, I'm sure you have people. I think Jake comes to your meetups, right? There's some people that come to your meetups that, you know, might own a business that possibly
yep.
an investor would need.
Yep, 100%. It's a good group of people that, you know, get together. I would say we're real estate focused, but we're also entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that start businesses, you know, handing out cards for, you know, insurance, contractors, you know, name it, and they probably come there.
Mm-hmm.
Accountants, shout out to Chris Nash.
Seriously, shout out to Chris.
So we do get a good pool of individuals from all different backgrounds, which makes it even more exciting because then you have different viewpoints on how you're looking at things. So.
Yeah. Fun thing about Chris is he calls me every year on my birthday, not remembering that it's my birthday, but just to tell me how much I owe in taxes. And I'm like, Chris,
that's a good birthday present.
Yeah, I'm like, Chris, you call me on my birthday again. And he's like, I do this every year. And I was like, now I feel like you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably mad at me because I didn't respond to him for 5 days about something, so I have to get back to him.
Oh, yeah, you should. This is your warning. You should
yes.
be getting back to him. But so, yes, you are sort of our go-to person here at Boston Connect Real Estate, a go-to agent that we have here for investing or any investor questions. But you also have resales as well, and you help buyers.
Yep.
So why don't you give everybody your contact information in case they want to get in touch with you when it comes to anything real estate?
Sure. The fastest way I check my email probably, you know, probably check it every 10 minutes if I had to be honest, but sam.horton@bostonconnect.com. And then you can also check out my website, which is what is it?
What is your website?
It's www.skhorton.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then my contact information will be on there as well.
Okay. Can you give your phone number one more time?
Yes. My phone number is 781-789-8366.
Mm-hmm. I said one more time, but I don't think you gave it the first time.
Okay. I did not.
So then why don't you give it one more time right now?
I just rolled with it. And then our meetup group, you can find it on meetup.com. You can email me. I'll add you to the email list that I send out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find it on Bigger Pockets. We meet on the third Thursday of every month. Our next speaker is Asset Strategy. They're coming to talk about a few things, mainly 1031 exchanges and DSTs, Delaware Statute Trusts. So it's for people that you know, have property. They don't want to pay the big taxable event that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
It's an alternative to invest and defer those taxes.
Yeah. That is interesting because I just recently helped one of our agents with some multiple offers that she received on a listing. And one of them was they were purchasing with a 1031 exchange. And I said, ask somebody else. I can answer most of the other questions. But I was like, I don't know. So that would be super interesting to go to sort of learn about those and how you can purchase a property with 1031 exchange.
100%. These guys are pros and they're bringing a qualified intermediary as well, which helps with the process of that 1031 exchange.
Oh, yeah. See, lots to learn. And it's going to be here?
It will be here, yep.
Okay. And how can people sign up for that again?
They can reach out to me directly. Again, you can email me at sam.horton, H-O-R-T-O-N, at bostonconnect.com, or you can check out my website, www.skhorton.com.
Okay. Final thoughts for our last minute. What is the most important thing that you could, you know, most important word of advice that you could give somebody who's thinking about investing in real estate?
Take action.
Take action.
Yes.
By what? Asking questions?
Asking questions. It could be anything. It could be listening to podcasts. BiggerPockets.com is a great source. There's hundreds of other ones out there. Mm-hmm. I like the older podcasts versus the newer ones, if you are getting into that. You can go to local networking events, you know, talk to people, talk to your local real estate agents, because, you know, there will be some that are definitely into investing and can definitely steer you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. What about a loan officer? Could somebody just reach out to a loan officer as well and sort of see if that's something that they can even afford to do?
Yes, 100%. I always recommend it to anyone looking to get into it to at least get pre-approved to see where you stand and see if you can actually pull the trigger.
Yeah. Well, that is great advice. Thank you so much, Sam, for joining me tonight. Again, Sam Horton, who is a full-time realtor here at Boston Connect Real Estate, our go-to realtor here for anything investing. So thank you so much for joining. I will be back on Saturday, bright and early at 8 a.m. with Sharon McNamara, the broker owner of Boston Connect Real Estate, to continue our discussion about the NAR settlement. And Tracy Grady will be joining us as well. So thank you so much. We'll see you on Saturday.
Thank you.